a set of steak knives. It's Car Windshield. And now it can be yours. Here's how. Next time you're in a car and the driver's driving recklessly, simply say nothing. That's right. Let them change CDs. Let them text on their phones. Ignore that little voice in your head that's trying to warn you. And you too can experience Car Windshield. Passengers who have tried Car Windshield agree. It's a smash. Car Windshield may not be for everyone, as it can lead to severe side effects and even death. Please consult your physician after you've experienced Car Windshield. Passengers who wish to avoid Car Windshield can do so by following simple steps, like trusting their instincts, speaking up, and telling their friends to slow down.
In the real world, there is no spokesperson to prevent reckless driving. There's only you. Speak up.
Act now. Paramedics are standing by.
This has been a message from the Ad Council. For more information, go to youarethespokesperson.com.
The Poetry Hour show has been pre-recorded. Hello, and thank you for tuning in to the one and only WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This is Saf, and you are listening to the Poetry Hour. The phone numbers to the station is 313-845-9676 or toll-free 800-585-4322, extension 9676. And the studio is Studio A. Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope that you enjoy your show. The show is dedicated for poetry and poets, especially local poets and local poetry. And we are bringing poetry live to the radio, because usually nowadays what we can hear on the radio is basically music, and more music. And hopefully we could try to bring in something that is from the original of what music started, which is poetry. You can't do music without poetry. And that's why we're hoping that we can have an interesting show. Hope that you enjoy it. And I hope that we will have a lot of listeners. Thanks again for tuning in. And we have Angela with us today. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm just fine, thanks.
Great. Angela is a staff of HFCC. And would you please introduce yourself to the listeners?
Sure. I'm Angela Hazakanavala, and I teach English here, mostly composition. But I get to teach literature every once in a while, and poetry is one of my favorite things, so it's kind of nice to be here today.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you very much for being here. I was kind of, searching for somebody to begin with who would be my first, guest. And when I actually got to meet you, I was very excited. And what I heard about you, that you did teach modern poetry before and stuff like that, it's kind of interesting to have you with us, and I hope that the listeners are enjoying our conversation here.
Me too.
Thank you very much. So I would like to ask you about your background of poetry to begin with.
Well, there's my background in liking poetry, and then there's my background in teaching poetry. So I've been teaching for about a decade. I taught high school first, and I moved on to teach college, and the past 4 years I've been teaching here. So I've been teaching poetry that whole time, various ways, various semesters, various kinds of poetry. And I really like it when students come in and they think that they're not going to get poetry, they're kind of afraid of poetry, and then by the end of the semester it turns out they really like it. But I can only teach poetry because I like it. I don't write it, but I like it.
Right. And that's why I did the show, because I like poetry. I can't teach poetry.
Maybe you could. You never know.
So, as music, people use music for, just get in the mood, or if they're sad, or if they're angry, or if they just want to get happy or something. What is poetry used for?
I'd say it's used for a lot of the same things, because poetry tends to be a little bit more open to interpretation than other kinds of writing. I think people can find themselves in poetry really easily. I think music does that too. So when you're really angry, there's probably a poet you could read, and do well with that. Or if you're feeling really happy, there's plenty of poetry for that. And it tends to take something that feels really abstract, you know? Emotions are really abstract things, and it puts them into words that suddenly makes them seem a lot clearer. And who doesn't like that, really?
Mm-hmm. So there are types of poetry, as you mentioned, and is there a way you can probably go into brief detail of types of poetry?
Sure. I mean, there's form when we talk about poetry, you know? Most people, when they think of poetry, they think about rhyming and stuff. And sure, some poetry rhymes, and some rhymes more than others. You go back further, and poems seem to be a little bit more interested in rhyme than more modern poetry, although modern poets rhyme too. But, you know, there's a lot of the basic stuff that you probably learned in school, you know. There's sonnets, and there's, you know, villanelles, and there's other fancy-sounding things. But usually when we talk about poetry, we like to talk more about eras, you know. People who wrote at a certain time tended to write a certain way. So that's usually when you study poetry, you start by looking at it chronologically, because that tends to mirror how, you know, the forms have changed over time.
Okay, and if you personally would look at the forms of poetry, what would be your favorite?
Oh, boy. That's a tough one. No matter when someone asks me about favorites, I always have a hard time answering. Like, mm-hmm. you know, favorite music, favorite book. And, I mean, I teach English. I'm supposed to have favorites, right? But I really don't. I think that there's really something to like just about everywhere. There's stuff that I don't like, but there's definitely no one favorite that I can point to, which is kind of sad, but maybe it's a good thing. I don't know. Maybe I'm less biased because of that.
Yeah, that way you'd be listening to everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you have a favorite thing, then you tend to stick to that and that's it.
Yeah.
And then you start hating other things, I guess.
Right. And you never find out what it is that you're missing.
Correct. That's a good way to look at it. Wonderful. And are you, you teach modern poetry, and are you familiar, or are you, you know, do you listen to or read the old poetry? Understand that there's old poetry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you go back, poetry is probably the first way people started writing, you know? It's uh-huh. one of those ways that you can really get important ideas across in sort of a quick way. So, I mean, poetry goes all the way back, and all of it's good. I mean, Shakespeare, you know, students especially are like, oh gosh, no, I'm never going to understand Shakespeare. But he says just the same stuff we do. It just sounds different. It
sounds different, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. And back to the forms of poetry and what was poetry used for. When we look back at Shakespeare and people before him or people in his era, like, was it used, you know, from one person to his lover, or was it used for the, you know, the kings, so they can make the king feel good, or what was it used for to begin with?
Well, both of those things for sure. I mean, Shakespeare especially, I mean, he wrote sonnets, a whole lot of sonnets, over 100 of them. And some of them were directed at a specific person. Some historians like to think they know who it is, but no one really knows who it is. Some of them were directed at what would have been his patrons at the time, the people who were essentially paying him, most of whom were royalty or related to royalty. And sometimes there's some stuff out there that kind of undermines those people, that sort of pokes fun at them in a way that maybe they wouldn't notice. So it's also sort of a way to be subversive,
uh-huh.
Which we don't really associate with people back in the 1500s and 1600s, but it was there.
Right. Cool. And speaking of poets, what would be, or who would be the favorite poet? And I don't know, you said you don't have favorites. Who would be the most read poetry person?
Oh, boy. You mean personally for me?
Yeah, personally for you, yeah. And why?
Well, it is a hard question. A lot of it depends on mood. Honestly, and it's too bad radio is not a visual medium, because I have in front of me this book that you've probably seen called Where the Sidewalk Ends.
Yes.
Shel Silverstein, right? I think it's from the 70s. I got it for my 8th birthday, so
cool.
And it looks like it. It's kind of torn up and stuff. And of all the poets in the universe, I've probably read more Shel Silverstein than anyone else, because I've been reading him since I was 8.
Wow.
You know, so you cover time, and he's got other books, and you know, back when you're a kid and people are telling you that, you know, it's kind of okay to do goofy things, and, well, why wouldn't you keep reading that, you know? As a teacher, I don't know. I mean, everyone always wants to know about Shakespeare. For some reason, in people's heads, when they think poetry, they think Shakespeare first, which right. I guess makes some sense. So I've read a lot of that, but, you know, sometimes when I'm in the mood, I read just about anything. I like a lot of the people who are writing right now, people like Billy Collins, who's really, really accessible. Like, if you think you're afraid of poetry, read Billy Collins and you'll never be afraid again. He just writes for everyone. And but he does it without not being poetic, if that makes sense. Like, he doesn't stop thinking about the fact that he's writing poetry, even though it's clear he wants to reach people who don't like poetry.
Uh-huh, okay. All right, cool. So let's get to the poems that you like. Let's get to the names of the poems first.
Okay. Well, let's see. How can we do this? You want to do this chronologically, what I liked first?
Yeah, let's do it like that. Why not?
All right. Well, since I have Shel Silverstein, I mean, my favorite in the whole book, the one I read over and over again, is Sarah Cynthia Sylvia Stout Would Not Take the Garbage Out, which is really just about a girl who wouldn't listen to her father, wouldn't take the garbage out until it, well, filled the house, and then the neighborhood, and then the country, and then the world.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty
that's
nice.
That's deep.
Yeah, very deep. And I think I liked it when I was 8 because it's gross. Like, there's gloppy glumps of cold oatmeal and stuff like that. And that's, you know, it's gross, but it's fun. and he's one of those poets who can rhyme without... Okay, people like it when poems rhyme. I'm not usually a big fan.
No?
No.
Why?
Not a big fan. Because usually when people try to write rhyming poetry, they kind of forget that they should be writing poetry and they're just writing rhyme instead. Like, you see that a lot in music, which has the music itself to fall back on, right? So it can be really interesting even if the words aren't super interesting. But when it's on a page, that doesn't work so well. So you have to rhyme pretty carefully.
So let's... This is a question out of the text. When you say you don't like the poetry, or you're not a very big fan of poetry that rhymes, what would be poetry in, you know, regular you know, language for me and other people to understand if poetry is not supposed to be just rhyming?
Ah, so now we're trying to define things, aren't we?
There we go.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I think what poetry does is it takes something that's abstract and makes it seem real.
Okay.
Usually by making some association with something we already know, but it makes it makes us look at it in a new way. And people can do that while rhyming, you know. I mean, you read Shakespeare and his stuff usually rhymes, and he's doing the same thing as modern poets do. But sometimes, especially when people are maybe not quite as experienced, they fall back on rhyme as sort of a crutch. Like, oh, if I make it rhyme, then it's a poem.
Right.
And but if you're not taking something that's sort of abstract and making it real, like you're staying abstract or you're being silly just so you can fit the rhyme in, then you're kind of not doing poetry. You're just writing rhymes. And there's nothing wrong with that either. It's just not the same thing.
Uh-huh. So basically it's bringing a description of something in a 3D dimension, probably. Is that...
Kind of, yeah. I mean, imagery is one of those big words we always use when we talk about poetry. So you should be able to see something when you're done reading a poem or while you're reading it. And it should be something you hadn't really thought of before, I think. I mean, over time, of course, things are going to start sounding familiar. I mean, someone had to say roses are red, violets are blue at one point. Now we've heard it so many times that it doesn't seem new anymore. But to the original audience, it did. So... as time passes, it's probably getting harder to be original because so many things have been said already. So.
Cool. Appreciate that explaining. Okay. You want to read something for the audience, for the listeners? Before you do, though, for the listeners that are just tuning in, you are listening to the Poetry Hour on the one and only WHFR.FM. WHFR.FM. The station that's making waves right here out of the campus of Henry Ford Community College. We are introducing Angela. Angela's last name is?
Hathi Kanavala.
Hathi Kanavala. I got it.
Very good.
Thank God I did. And she is an instructor here at the Henry Ford Community College in the English department. And she's joining us today to give us a little bit of a taste of what poetry is and some of her own picks of poetry. She's going to read to us a poem that she is loving and she has been reading for a long time.
Well, if you want to hear the whole thing, by the way, rhyme in children's poetry, really important. Kids love stuff that rhymes. And so this Shel Silverstein poem is one that rhymes and makes you kind of sit up and think a little bit. So this is Sarah Cynthia Sylvia Stout would not take the garbage out. Sarah Cynthia Sylvia Stout would not take the garbage out. She'd scour the pots and scrape the pans, candy the yams and spice the hams. And though her daddy would scream and shout, she simply would not take the garbage out. And so it piled up to the ceilings. Coffee grounds, potato peelings, brown bananas, rotten peas, chunks of sour cottage cheese. It filled the can, it covered the floor, it cracked the window and blocked the door. With bacon rinds and chicken bones, drippy ends of ice cream cones, prune pits, peach pits, orange peel, gloppy glumps of cold oatmeal, pizza crusts and withered greens, soggy beans and tangerines, crusts of black burned buttered toast, gristly bits of beefy roasts. The garbage rolled on down the hall, it raised the roof, it broke the wall, greasy napkins, cookie crumbs, gobs of gooey bubblegum, cellophane from green bologna, rubbery, blubbery macaroni, peanut butter caked and dry, curdled milk and crusts of pie, moldy melons, dried up mustard, eggshells mixed with lemon custard, cold French fries and rancid meat, yellow lumps of cream of wheat. At last the garbage reached so high that it finally touched the sky. And all the neighbors moved away, and none of her friends would come to play. And finally Sarah Cynthia Stout said, "Okay, I'll take the garbage out." But then, of course, it was too late. The garbage reached across the state, from New York to the Golden Gate, and there, in the garbage she did hate, poor Sarah met an awful fate that I cannot now relate, because the hour is much too late. But children, remember Sarah Stout, and always take the garbage out.
Nice. I love the way you delivered it.
Oh, thanks.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah, you know, if you read a poem and make it sound boring, then it's going to be boring.
Definitely, huh? So you could tell a lot about the poet's thinking when he was writing this poem.
Yeah, I mean, of course, he's trying to teach a lesson, right? A lot of poetry for children does that. So in here, you know, it's, you know, do the things you're supposed to do. It's take the garbage out when you're supposed to take the garbage out so that you don't get buried in it someday.
Right.
But it's also, I mean, he does it. One of the reasons that Shel Silverstein succeeds when he writes for children is that he's not talking down to them.
Uh-huh.
He's pulling them in with thinking of all these gross things that would happen if you didn't take the garbage out. And he's making you laugh because, of course, the garbage wouldn't ever fill the entire country or break the walls of your house. But still, that would be the ultimate problem if you never took it out. So so it really sucks you in. And,
right.
You know, when I was 8 and reading this, it's great. And now I'm not 8 and I'm reading it and I still think it's great.
Right. I think it's great, too. It's cool.
Yeah. And, you know, Dr. Seuss does the same thing. You know, all those rolling rhymes, a lot of really... it's almost musical, you know, it bounces along. We call that meter in poetry, but really it's the rhythm. It's all the stuff that goes along with it. It pulls you in. What's going to be the next gross thing in the pile?
And he went to the extreme.
Yeah. Yeah, he does it a lot, you know. There's children who erase each other and, you know, noses that are long enough to write poems on. You know, a lot of overstatement. It works.
Cool. So that's one of your favorite poems.
Yeah, one of many.
One of many, huh?
Mm-hmm.
What would be the next favorite?
Oh, well, how about something completely different? You want some Shakespeare?
Yeah, let's hear that. Let's see what Shakespeare had to say.
Now, I thought about picking, like, a favorite Shakespeare, but as you've probably figured out, favorites, not so good at.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to pick Sonnet 18, I think, because Sonnet 18, well... it's nice. It's a love poem without being too much of a love poem.
Uh-huh.
If that makes sense. So, here's this one. Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate. Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May, and summer's lease hath all too short a date. Sometimes too hot the eye of heaven shines, and often is his gold complexion dimmed. And every fair from fair sometimes declines, by chance or nature's changing course untrimmed. But thy eternal summer shall not fade, nor lose possession of that fair thou owest. Nor shall death brag thou wanderest in his shade, when in eternal lines to time thou growest. So long as men can breathe or eyes can see, so long lives this, and this gives life to thee.
That's it.
That's it.
Cool.
Sonnets are way short, 14 lines.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And now in comparison to other poets, why was Shakespeare the poet that was like the only person that if you ask anybody that don't know nothing about poetry, ask them about who can you name and Shakespeare comes to mind.
Always comes up. Well, I think one of the reasons is that he's probably better known for his plays, but his plays were written in verse. So even though they're plays, they read like poems. You know, he keeps using meter. He often does use some rhyme. So even though action is happening on a stage, it still sounds like poetry. So, you know, you read Hamlet, you read Romeo and Juliet, you're going to remember those things. And in your head, they're poetry, even though they're plays. The other reason we know him is first, he wrote a lot, way more than most people of his day did that was remembered. I mean, there were plenty of people writing back then. When theater and poetry are your primary forms of entertainment, there's plenty of people out there doing them. But his stuff gets preserved better because he had wealthier people supporting him. When by the end of your career, really, you're the official playwright for the king, people are going to kind of hang on to your stuff.
Right.
And also, I think because he was prolific and he doesn't write anything that's terrible. You know, there was a lot of probably bad writing going on. Just like, you know, now there's a bajillion TV shows, right? And some of them are really excellent and some of them are just terrible.
Right, they're not supposed to be there.
They should go somewhere else. And chances are 20 years, 50 years, 100 years from now, the ones that are going to have lasting power are the ones that are good. And exactly. All the crud that's on everywhere else, no one's going to remember that.
Right.
So I guess he's the stuff that rose to the top.
Who would be another poet of his time that you can mention right now? And maybe he wasn't as famous as him, but for literature people, they know him as well as Shakespeare.
Well, one would be Christopher Marlowe, who was literally his contemporary. They were writing at the same time. In fact, they were kind of rivals. And, you know, I have just a little anthology here, and there's like four or five poems by Shakespeare and one by Marlowe. He had a shorter lifespan. That's sort of an interesting story that, since I don't want to screw it up, I won't go into now. But let's just say he had a short life. Another poet that people probably do know from that same era is John Donne. He wrote just a teensy bit after Shakespeare and wrote some really great stuff. He's probably my other favorite from that era. If you like Shakespeare or you think you like Shakespeare and you want to read more, anyone labeled Renaissance is for you because that's the era that he wrote in.
Cool.
Yeah. People were very excited about life during the Renaissance when they're writing, so it's nice.
All right. You have another poem that you want to get into?
Sure. I have one that I like. No. But one that I really like to share with students, especially at certain times of year. It's called Directions for Resisting the SAT. Of course, not too many people around here take the SAT, so, you know, you could put ACT in, right? So it's a poem about school and specifically about standardized tests.
Cool.
So, you know, most students these days in school, there's a bajillion standardized tests that you take. You know, every year you take at least one.
Right.
And so this is a very short poem, a very modern poem, by a guy named Richard Haig. I actually don't know anything about Richard Haig beyond this poem, but it's good enough. Not a thing. I guess I should look him up, but I didn't. But I like this one. Well, we'll talk about why after.
Okay, let's do that.
Yeah. So this is Directions for Resisting the SAT. Do not believe in October or May or in any Saturday morning with pencils. Do not observe the rules of gravity, commas, history. Lie about numbers. Blame your successes, every one of them, on rotten luck. Resign all clubs and committees. Go down with the ship, any ship. Speak nothing like English. Desire to live whole, like an oyster or snail, and follow no directions. Listen to no one. Make your marks on everything.
That's kind of funny.
It is kind of funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is this guy thinking?
Well, I think in one sense he's kind of messing with like the written directions for all these tests, you know? Uh-huh. Like make your marks heavy and stay within the lines and, you know, read all the directions carefully and make sure that your written responses are in English and all of those other kinds of things.
Right.
And he's turning them all on their head saying, well, why should we do all those things? What if we did something else instead?
Uh-huh.
Maybe these tests don't really tell us too much about who we are. Maybe we shouldn't worry so much about what the test makers think of us. Maybe we should try something else for a while.
Nice.
And, you know, as an educator, and I did used to teach high school where we did have to give all of those tests. It was nice. It was a nice way to relieve tension in students, too.
Uh-huh. And you said you like it because there's another reason for liking it?
Yeah, I think because it makes one of the most abstract things out there, that weird anxiety that we have when it comes to things that measure how smart we are or how good we are at something.
Mm-hmm.
It takes that anxiety about, oh my gosh, what if I don't measure up, and points out how foolish that is.
Yeah.
Like, what can you do with your pencil on a Saturday morning that's going to prove to someone that you're smart enough or good enough or that you deserve to belong somewhere?
Right. That's a good way of thinking about it. Just like the IQ tests.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, some other tests like that. Yeah, they have a way of trying to measure your smartness,
mm-hmm.
and uniqueness, I guess.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, when you do measures, say IQ tests, high IQ, and there's a lot of people that score very high,
mm-hmm.
and what happens then?
Yeah. Right. What does that mean? Does it mean anything? Maybe not.
Right. And there's some people for the SATs and ACTs, like, really struggle hard, and mm-hmm. they study hard to try to score good.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the end, you know.
Yeah.
And it's not a talking down about the people that do study
right.
hard, of course.
No, I think really the point is that you're more than that.
Uh-huh.
That can only be one part of who you are, and maybe it's not the most important.
Right, cool. Very nice.
Thanks.
And what is it that you, before we go into another one,
uh-huh.
what is it that you think, I don't know if you are actually planning your future into poetry more, or uh-huh. this is just like something for fun, like listening to music or something?
Hmm. Well, you know, I mean, I do get to teach it. You know, I don't write poetry. I really don't. People try to tell me, oh, you do, you're just keeping it hidden. But no,
huh.
the last time I wrote poetry was in college, and I've gone back to read it, and it was terrible.
No way.
Oh, yeah, really bad. Really bad. And I think that might be just part of what it's like to write poetry. Like, if you write poetry really well when you're young, I mean, that's cool, but it's also kind of rare. Because
mm-hmm.
I think there's something to be said for life experience. It's very hard to take abstract ideas and make them real for people until you've had enough experience that you can see how that happens outside of poetry, you know?
Right.
In fact, that whole idea of making things, the like official literary word is concrete. So you take something that's abstract and you make it concrete, you make it real. That's something that, since I teach writing most of the time, you know, composition, all our English classes here, that's one of the things that students have the hardest time thinking. So I always have them visualize. Okay, all right, everyone, just I'm going to say a couple of words, and you think about them. And so I'll say love.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say, you know, mom. And I'll say, you know, justice. And then I have them think and sometimes write, okay, so what is it that you're envisioning? And, you know, maybe there's 25 or 30 people in the room. There will be 25 or 30 completely different answers because those are abstract terms. You know, you think about love, that's one thing to you this minute. It's something else to the person next to you. It's something different now than it will be for you maybe in 5 minutes or 5 years or something like that. And so when you're writing about ideas like that, you can't just go on and on about love. You have to make it something else, something that's really a lot more specific, that's more real. And good poetry can do that, but I can't, which is why I don't write it.
So poetry as other talents,
mm-hmm.
it's a God-given talent?
I think it can be learned to an extent. I think maybe some people see the world in a way that helps them write poetry more easily, but you can definitely learn to write poetry. Just for some people, it might take more patience than others.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we have creative writing classes here, and I've seen a lot of good work come out of those. You know, sometimes we have a creative writing contest every year, and the stuff that comes out of that is often really, really good. And from some of those students, it's the first really, really good thing they've done. So it's certainly something that you can learn. But it's also something that you know, you have to practice. You know, it's just like playing the piano. You can't just sit down and pound out something perfect the first time. It takes years to get there. And if you really want to be a poet, then you're going to have to keep doing it. It's like a job.
Right.
You can't
just
wake up one morning and have it.
Cool. For you listeners that are just tuning in, once again, this is the Poetry Hour, hosted by your host, Seth. And we are here at the WHFR Dearborn, WHFR.FM, the station that's making waves, talking about poetry and poets and poems. And we have Angela with us today, giving us a taste of poetry and giving us some information about poetry and poets. And she is thinking about reading another poem for us.
Well, I have to decide if I want to read a whole one or just part of one. Well, let's start with an easier one, and then maybe we'll look at a harder one. There's one poet I like named Billy Collins, and some people who are into poetry love Billy Collins, and some people think he's too easy, which I don't think is very fair. I mean, if poetry's so hard, then who's going to read it? And so he takes things that are... he tells little stories that illuminate concepts that we all think about in a way we haven't thought about before.
Uh-huh.
So this poem is from his collection, Questions About Angels, which is actually a little older, from, I think, early 90s. But it's a poem, it's called The History Teacher. And it's another one that's kind of funny and kind of not. So, Well, here's this one. Trying to protect his students' innocence, he told them the Ice Age was really just the Chilly Age, a period of a million years where everyone had to wear sweaters. And the Stone Age became the Gravel Age, named after the long driveways of the time. The Spanish Inquisition was nothing more than an outbreak of questions such as, how far is it from here to Madrid? What do you call the matador's hat? The War of the Roses took place in a garden, and the Enola Gay dropped one tiny atom on Japan. The children would leave his classroom for the playground to torment the weak and the smart, mussing up their hair and breaking their glasses, while he gathered up his notes and walked home past flower beds and white picket fences, wondering if they would believe that soldiers in the Boer War told long, rambling stories designed to make the enemy nod off.
Cool. Cool. Very nice.
Thanks. I like what he does in this one by, you know, having this well-meaning teacher, you know, who's teaching probably younger children history. And, of course, history is full of, you know, violence and torment and all kinds of problems.
Right.
But, you know, he's thinking, oh, they're just kids, you know, they can't quite handle that. So let's tailor history a little bit so it doesn't sound so bad. And yet the kids go out and, well, that instinct to sort of torment the weak is already built into them. So it just happens on the playground. And so the kids aren't learning the history that would maybe show them how bad things happen when there's violence and torment. And so they're just out on the playground tormenting each other instead. Poor guy. He just walks off past his white picket fences.
That's nice. I like his stuff.
Yeah. And notice it doesn't rhyme, right?
He is still alive.
Yeah. Yeah. He was actually poet laureate a few years ago. He served a couple of terms as poet laureate. Yeah. And he's writing now. He had a collection that came out, gosh, pretty recently. He's got a lot. He writes quite a bit. And his stuff is really easy to track down. Our library on campus has some of it, too.
Cool. Yeah. Speaking on campus,
mm-hmm.
What is there at HFCC that is offered for students that are interested in poetry?
All kinds of good things. First of all, everyone here will have to take English 132 at some point, and you might luck out and get to read some poetry there, because we do tend to teach some literature in English 132. But if you really are looking to focus on poetry, your first option, if you want to write it, is to take creative writing, which is English 139. That we offer just about every semester, and the people who teach that class tend to be really great. And so if you think you're a poet, or you are a poet and you want to be better, or you are wondering if you can swing it or not, that would be one great class to take. If you want to keep reading poetry, there's a whole bunch of different classes you could take that are offered on a rotating basis. So if in the winter semester you want to take a class about poetry, then you should probably take a look at English 231, which is an introduction to literature class that focuses on poetry and drama. So you'll probably get to read Shakespeare in a couple of different ways in that class, both the drama and the poetry, plus a whole lot of other people. Other classes that would be fun that are offered sometimes, English 239 is modern American poetry. That's a lot of fun. There you focus primarily on the 20th and 21st centuries, so pretty recent stuff. Our children's literature class, 246, I have a feeling that you're going to read poetry, and it's probably more along the lines of Shel Silverstein than any of the other stuff, but poetry for children is actually a pretty big market, and it's really easy to write bad poetry for children. So in that class, you'd probably read the good stuff. And then our American literature classes, too. You know, there's always been poetry written pretty much everywhere. So when you take an American lit class, you'll read more than just poetry, but you'll definitely read some. So there's lots of good stuff out there.
Nice, nice, interesting. So students, whoever is interested, please sign up.
Mm-hmm.
Winter semester is coming up soon, and you need to start registering, speaking to whoever you have to speak to try to find what classes you need.
Mm-hmm.
So when you were studying, what got you into majoring in the English?
Oh, boy. Well, I was kind of that kid who always had her nose in a book back in the day, you know?
Cool.
I mean, I was a little bit of a nerd sometimes, not always. But whether I felt like a nerd or not, I was always reading something.
Uh-huh.
And so studying English made sense because I liked to read anyway. And poetry, surprisingly, if you ask the other people I teach with, you'll find out that even among English people, there's a lot of fear of poetry.
Really?
Because it seems like it might be difficult. Or they've been taught in a way that made it seem difficult. Like, oh, you have to know, you know, all of these terms and be able to apply them, you know, kind of turning a poem into more of a math problem, which, nothing against math here, but, you know, poetry is one of those things that should be for everybody, but is often thought of otherwise. And since I'm always kind of on the side of the underdog, I guess when I was studying English, poetry made a whole lot of sense, because it's kind of the underdog.
Uh-huh. Have you ever took theater?
I have not. I mean, I've read theater.
Uh-huh.
And students sometimes tell me I'm sort of theatrical, but thanks. But you know what? Ask me to memorize stuff, and I am gone. I can't.
No.
I'm terrible at memorizing lines. The only time I was ever on stage, I had no words to say, so it was fine. But yeah, no, theater, sadly, is not for me. But I love it. I mean, I love watching it.
Yeah, you would do perfect, I think, if you can memorize it or whatever.
Yeah, I can't, though. Sorry.
It's the way of delivery that you have.
Yeah, if I could sit there with my lines in front of me, but that doesn't make for very good theater watching.
So, uh-huh.
Yeah, no, I freeze up. I've tried to do, you know, little, you know how teachers do skits and stuff, you know,
yeah.
So but even then, you know, it's two lines, I'm gonna screw it up.
Uh-huh.
I'm much better when I have it in front of me or I can just talk.
So you could do radio theater.
Yeah, maybe I could do radio theater. Yeah, give me some lines to read. You let me know what's coming up. I'll.
There we go. You taught in high school?
I did, yeah.
And college?
Yep.
What's the difference?
Well, I mean, there's always the thing that people always say is different is that college students are more motivated, which
mm-hmm.
they are for various reasons, either because, you know, they're paying for school now or because they can see suddenly that what they're learning relates to what it is they're going to do. And that's true. But I think for most students, there's just this switch that flips at a certain age where they realize that they're this is going to sound really bad, but after years of dealing with high school students, I think it's fair for me to say, where they realize they're not always right,
uh-huh.
and that someone else might have something to teach them.
Uh-huh.
There's just something psychologically that happens during those like high school years where suddenly every student thinks he or she is the one who knows it all.
I can relate to that.
Yeah, oh, I bet you can. I could too, you know? I mean, I was probably a pain in the butt when I was in high school, because that's just how high school people are. It takes a special person to have the patience for that. And since my patients had a limited lifespan, I moved on to college, and I like it. I like it quite a bit.
So in terms of poetry, what was mm-hmm. the comparison with students that had...
Yeah, you know, I would say that poetry is one of those things that actually can cross over, because most people don't assume they know stuff about poetry already, and when they realize they can know it, it's sort of an exciting thing.
Uh-huh.
Like, they realize that... you know, reading a poem that sometimes there's sort of a riddle built in, and they kind of figure out what's going on, and, you know, it's like a little light bulb goes off, you know? It's that old saying that you can see something sort of click in. And since poetry often brings out emotional reactions in people, like, that's really sort of its goal, is to take something like an emotion and make it real. for high school students as well as college students. I mean, it's a natural fit because it's an emotional time, you know. It's probably better for, you know, the 14 to 24 age group than anyone else on the planet because there's just so much swirling around, you know.
Right.
There's all that emotion that can sometimes be put on the page, which is, it's a nice thing to read, mm-hmm. I think, for students.
Cool. And as you see today's era, from high school to college, mm-hmm. people are just being crazy about music and concerts and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And as we mentioned at the beginning, poetry was used as that, you know, back in the days, mm-hmm. where it was an entertaining way or avenue or something.
Yeah.
Today's music and songs, in comparison with poetry, what can you say about that?
I think the best music has a lot in common with poetry.
Uh-huh.
It usually depends on the artist. I mean, some artists really just, you know, their goal isn't necessarily to make you think that hard. You know, not all music is supposed to do that, and not all poetry is either, granted, but poetry doesn't have music to back it up necessarily. But, you know, if as a musician what you want is for people to, you know, get up and dance or, you know, get really, I don't know, excited or something, you can bring emotions out in people without having to think too hard about the words. But when you combine, you know, music that does its job with lyrics that do their job, well, then sometimes you can have something that's more powerful than a poem just on the page. And I remember textbooks, a lot of high school textbooks would include some songs, and they probably seem dated now, but, you know, like Beatles lyrics, they're mm-hmm. they're nothing super special, because really the Beatles were just really, really popular, and so people tend to know them. But you see it on the page, and it's interesting, but then you hear it, and it's something else.
Right.
Which is probably why I think kind of hard about how I read poems, because I'm certainly not going to get up and sing them. You wouldn't want to hear that. But, you know, the way you hear something will influence what you think about it. Mm-hmm. So musicians who pay attention to that, I think, do a good job of sort of being poets at the same time.
Right. Cool. So do you have something else for us to listen to?
Sure.
As far as a poem?
Yeah. Well, I've read you the most fun ones already. I kind of saved the fun ones to go up front. How about some more Shel Silverstein?
There you go.
Can't go wrong with him, right? Let's go back. Make yourself eight again.
Who gave you that as a gift?
My aunt and uncle did, actually. Yeah, and it's stayed with me ever since. It smells a little bit like my basement, but, you know, that's all right.
And why did they think of a poetry book to give you?
Well, even by the time I was eight, I was always reading. Uh-huh. People always got me books. I think this was for my eighth birthday. Yep, my eighth birthday. It's even got my little pony stamp on it. So I put that on all my books back then. Yeah, so always got books. And this one lasted. It's good. If you want your kid to like books, get them some hardcovers every once in a while. They last way longer.
Yeah.
So here's one that's pretty fun, called Smart. My dad gave me $1 bill because I'm his smartest son, and I swapped it for two shiny quarters because two is more than one. And then I took the quarters and I traded them to Lou for three dimes. I guess he don't know that three is more than two. And then along came old blind Bates, and just because he can't see, he gave me four nickels for my three dimes, and four is more than three. And I took the nickels to Hiram Coombs down at the seed feed store, and the fool gave me five pennies for them, and five is more than four. And then I went and showed my dad, and he got red in the cheeks and closed his eyes and shook his head, too proud of me to speak.
That was nice.
Yeah, that's pretty fun.
That was nice, and it's funny because I have some kids of my own, and that is very real.
Yeah, it's the number that matters, right? There's no concept of money. It's just, you know, if I have five things, that's way more than having one thing.
Right. It's nice of thinking.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So, for those listeners who is out there listening, just tuning in, this is Saf on the one and only WHFR.FM, the station making waves. We can be reached here at 313-845-9676 or toll-free at 1-800-585-4322, extension 9676. We are here with Angela talking about poetry on the Poetry Hour show. Angela, again, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
And sharing your information with us. If you want to look at poetry today and the future of poetry, what would be your hope for poetry?
Well, mostly I hope that people keep reading it. And I think that people will. I mean, our attention is split. You know, there's a whole lot of other things we could be doing with our time. There's a whole lot of stuff out there that we could be reading. There's a whole lot of stuff we could be listening to. But there's something I think that poetry does that most other things don't do. You know, it's not always the first thing we think of. But I think it helps us see the world in a way that most other kinds of writing or, you know, even music or anything else, that most other things don't do, you know? It makes us look at things with new eyes. And I think that's one thing that people should do no matter what, you know? Looking at things in a way that you haven't before is always something that we should be doing. But I think poetry helps us do that more than most other forms of literature, of art. It's just, it's one of those things that I know isn't going anywhere. I think it's sort of built into us to write poetry. But I'm not always sure it's built into us to want to read poetry. So I kind of hope that, you know, that continues on. And, you know, since I'm not on my deathbed or anything, I'll do what I can while I'm here, you know?
Right, huh? Take care of your students and keep teaching them poetry.
Yeah.
You have anything else that you wanted to read? Is that what that book was
open? Yeah, I do have. I have one more. It's not Shel Silverstein funny, but if, granted, I am not an old person. I won't tell you how old I am, but if you've ever seen me, I'm not an old person. But we all have our moments when we're wondering about the stuff that used to be in our heads but has seemed to slip away, you know?
Uh-huh.
That thing that's on the tip of our tongue that we just can't quite get out. And so Billy Collins has this poem called Forgetfulness that kind of gets at the heart of that feeling, which, again, very abstract. How do you describe it? I think he does a good job here. So maybe this will be a nice way to close it out.
Uh-huh.
And for anyone older who's listening, I think you'll feel this. And for everyone else, you will someday. This is called Forgetfulness. The name of the author is the first to go, followed obediently by the title, the plot, the heartbreaking conclusion, the entire novel, which suddenly becomes one you have never read, never even heard of. As if, one by one, the memories you used to harbor decided to retire to the southern hemisphere of the brain, to a little fishing village where there are no phones. Long ago, you kissed the names of the nine muses goodbye and watched the quadratic equation pack its bag, and even now, as you memorize the order of the planets, something else is slipping away. A state flower, perhaps, the address of an uncle, the capital of Paraguay. Whatever it is you are struggling to remember, it is not poised on the tip of your tongue, not even lurking in some obscure corner of your spleen. It has floated away down a dark mythological river whose name begins with an L, as far as you can recall, well on your own way to oblivion, where you will join those who have even forgotten how to swim and how to ride a bicycle. No wonder you rise in the middle of the night to look up the date of a famous battle in a book on war. No wonder the moon in the window seems to have drifted out of a love poem that you used to know by heart.
Nice.
Yeah, I think so.
That's very nice. That's by modern...
Yeah, that's Billy Collins, who was poet laureate for a while and is still doing a whole lot of writing.
Cool. That was very nice. That's a stage that where everybody... As you said and mentioned that.
And if it's not age-related, you know, you've got that exam in front of you, and you know you study this stuff, right? And suddenly it's just gone. It's that same feeling.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it retired somewhere.
Cool. If you want to mention to the listeners once again what HFCC has to offer for people who are interested in poetry and more in-depth,
sure.
If you may.
Yeah. In winter, you could certainly take creative writing, which is English 139. If you want to read poetry instead of writing it, you could take English 231, which is Introduction to Literature, where you'll read poetry and drama. You could also take children's literature, Intro to Children's Literature, where you'll probably read some great poetry for children. And beyond those classes, there's also an Introduction to the Short Story class, which, while not poetry, is still great for those who love literature. And another really interesting class being taught online called American Autobiography, where you'll read what famous people have had to say about themselves, which is its own form of literature and is very interesting. And then in the future, keep an eye out for things like English 239, which is modern American poetry, or other American lit classes before 1800 and after 1800, I think it is. Always poetry there. Lots of good stuff. Lots of good stuff.
And your office is found in the Learning Center, right?
Yeah, it's in the Learning Lab. It's up there. There's not too many of us with offices, but yeah, you can find me up there.
And what do you're up there helping students as well in the Learning Center?
Sure. I spend some time in the writing office helping students with writing, and, you know, my own students come by. But if you have a question about literature, I'd be happy to answer it.
Cool. That's very helpful.
Yeah.
And what would you recommend to people of literature and people of interest in poetry?
Boy, really pick up anything and see what you like. Everyone's got taste that's pretty individual. But if you're looking for a good place to start, there's a website called poets.org, which is through Academy of American Poets or something like that. There's a really nice selection of stuff, both modern and old. You can search by poet if there's someone you think you like. And then they'll list, like, related poets over on the side so you can explore further. So you don't even have to pick up a book, and you can still read really good poetry. And also, our library right here on campus has a really great poetry collection. So feel free to sort of explore the books as well, and any librarian can help you find those. We have a lot of really good stuff here.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you very much, Angela.
You're welcome.
It's been my pleasure to be interviewing you today and having you here on the station. I think everybody enjoyed this show, and I hope that everybody will enjoy the coming shows of the Poetry Hour. I am your host again, Saf, on the one and only WHFR 89.3 FM, the station that's making waves. WHFR Dearborn is located here on campus of Henry Ford Community College. And we are reached at 313-845-9676. And toll-free number, 800-585-4322, extension 9676. And also on the World Wide Web at www.whfr.fm. That's www.whfr.fm. Thank you for tuning in, and thank you for giving us your time, and we hope you have a great day. And thank you, Angela, one more time.
My pleasure.
And goodbye.
Animation, illustration, multimedia design, print design, web design, plug in to the graphic design department at Henry Ford Community College. The new graphic design program is full of choices. 5 new tracks, 5 new certificate programs, an associate degree program with 5 areas of concentration, and flexible class schedules that meet the needs of busy people. For more information, contact the Graphic Design Department at 313-845-6487 or graphicdesign@hfcc.edu. Graphic Design at Henry Ford Community College. Plug in. Henry Ford Community College presents the Charles Dickens classic, A Christmas Carol, November 13th through December 6th. Performances are Fridays at 7 p.m., Saturdays at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m., and Sunday matinees at 2 p.m. Tickets are only $12 for adults, $10 for students, and $5 for children 12 and under. please call 313-845-9817 for reservations or further information. All performances will be held in the Adre Auditorium at HFCC's Dearborn Campus. Call 313-845-9817 for A Christmas Carol, November 13th through December 6th.
What's up, this is Rob with 2Bs. Just want to let you know the Jump Button, your favorite dorky radio show ever, is moving after Thanksgiving. We are currently on Thursdays from 6 to 9, but as of the 28th of November, the Saturday after Thanksgiving, the Jump Button will be on Saturdays from 8 to midnight. We're going to celebrate the new time slot by having an all-hip-hop episode for the first week, and from there on out, we're going to do nothing but the dorky best ever. So listen to the Jump Button, currently 6 to 9 on Thursdays, but moving Saturdays 8 to midnight after November 28th, right here on the station making waves, WHFR.FM.
Variety is the spice of life, and variety is what you find on No Boys Allowed, where we bring you the best of female artists from all different genres. I'm Lynn, and I love bringing you lots of music, including the many flavors of folk to the zest of great jazz, along with a tasty recipe each week. So spice up your life every Saturday from 2 till 4 p.m. with me, Lynn, and No Boys Allowed, right here on WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves, 89.3 on your FM dial.
Hi, I'm Jay Koronik, host of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area, where each week we're getting down to the bones. It's all about local government, public education, the environment, the economy. What matters to you most is right next door. New ideas, fresh opinions, with elected representatives, prominent experts, and community activists. On the new WHFR Journal, every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. on WHFR 89.3 FM or from our website anytime, WHFR.FM. Getting down to the bones and making waves.
Charlie!
Hey, did you see that play last night?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and they still lost. Chef. You know, when I was playing, what we tried to...
you played in the street.
I played in the service.
Oh,
anyway,
oh.
What I'm trying to say is the kid, he should have...
Hey, you okay? Someone call 911!
Two out of three people with diabetes die of a heart attack or stroke, but you can lower the risk. Ask your healthcare provider how. For more info, go to diabetesactnow.org. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association and the Ad Council.
Need to know? WHFR's Tuesday Talk, noon to 2 p.m., features two unique hours of information you can't get from any other Detroit radio station. Need to know about science? Hour 1 from noon to 1 p.m., we're proud to present what we believe to be the best weekly radio science show, Are We Alone? Science Radio for Thinking Species, produced by the SETI Institute and hosted by nationally noted scientist Seth Shostak. Need to know about anything else? Hour 2, 1 to 2 p.m., the WHFR Forum, a wide range of program topics locally selected and, whenever possible, locally produced and hosted. From UFOs to metaphysics to intellectual history, from ecology to health. So check out Tuesday Talk each week, noon to 2 p.m. Science Radio is also available on the internet from SETI.org/radio. For the WHFR forum shows at any time, go to our own website, WHFR.FM, and click on Forum. Your need to know, our mission.
When was the last time someone told you to get lost? Join me, Tom Malia, on the Lost Highway every Saturday morning from 10 a.m. to noon. Let me be your musical GPS, where we travel down the musical highways and byways of alternative country, folk, or anything else that has a twang. That's The Lost Highway, Saturday morning, 10 a.m. to noon, on the only station making waves, 89.3 WHFR.FM.
D101 is open for your dining pleasure in the Student and Culinary Arts Center on Henry Ford Community College's main campus in Dearborn. 5101 offers a fresh, innovative approach to fine dining with all entrees made from the freshest ingredients with weekly specialties highlighting different countries and cultures. For hours of operation or to make reservations, please call 313-206-5101. That's 313-206-5101. 5101, an elegant dining experience at an affordable price.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
And Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking.
And they don't have to be plastered to kill someone or themselves. Even one or two drinks can impair your judgment and change your life forever.
So keep it real, keep it real. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk. Ooh, my honey. Come on, let me die. I'm gonna show you bitches. There's mud in your eye. Well, in my dust.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
This is Jen Cass, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. Such a smart choice.
WHFR.FM, 89.3, the station making waves. I'm Jeff, and you're listening to One Chord to Another every Tuesday, starting at 2 p.m., playing new and slightly used indie rock and pop for you up until 4 p.m. Thank you so much for spending a bit of your afternoon with me today. Lots of great stuff coming up, so hopefully I can make it worth your while. Just as a reminder, you can always reach me at the studio if you've got a request or a comment or anything you'd like to say. You can reach me at 313-845-9676. That's option one for the studio, or 800-585-4322. That's extension 9676. Again, that number is 313-845-9676. That's option one for the studio. I hope you've had a great week. This is going to be in a pretty good week for you if you're a fan of the band Sloan, because not only is the band playing this Saturday at the Fillmore in Detroit, they've also finally yesterday released the digital EP that they've been talking about on their website. I'm going to play a few songs off of the new EP entitled Hit and Run on the show today, including this one, which I'm going to start the show off with. This is Patrick Pentland singing on the song It Is Never off of the EP Hit and Run. It's Sloan on the station making waves, WHFR.FM.